Good morning. We're here at Radio Entrepreneurs at the home offices of JED Insurance and Financial Services. We're here with Jonathan Penta of Penta Wealth Management and UBS Services, as well as my co-host, Jonathan Friedman. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Jonathan, great to have you on the show. Want to give us, our listeners, a little broad-based introduction to your firm and what it is you guys do?
Sure. So I'm a senior partner of the Penta Wealth Management Group at UBS. We provide full-scale, comprehensive financial planning and investment management services for families that we serve on the private wealth side. But we also work with a lot of business owners, entrepreneurs, and corporate executives, and we help their businesses in a variety of ways, depending on what they're looking to accomplish, whether it be grow or sell the company, liquidity strategies.
So this morning's theme, as we've been talking about, is getting organized. And you're probably working with those companies that are sort of, a little bit after the startup phase, looking to grow, merge, acquire. Talk a little bit about what UBS can offer from that perspective and how you get involved.
Sure. So we help businesses in the spirit of getting organized very, very well in advance of a liquidity event. In some cases, a year, 2 years prior. So there's getting the right team of specialists in place. You know, I like to quarterback that effort. So having the right M&A attorney, the right accountant, in some cases, business valuation specialist, bringing those folks together to collaborate and plan in advance. UBS Investment Bank has built out a boutique network of investment banks that we work with to help companies, depending on what sector or industry that they're in. We have different boutique investment banks that specialize in different industries. So when I'm working with a business owner, depending on what space, what sector they're in, I can match them up with the appropriate boutique investment bank to help them, depending on what they're trying to accomplish.
And what are some of the, you do obviously financing, buyouts, any IPO work? Or you?
A little bit. I mean, in the small to middle market, the most common transactions that we're getting involved with is things like raising capital. So a company that's looking to grow and expand, whether it be a Series B or a Series A if it's a startup. So raising capital is a big one. Debt financing, private equity. A lot of M&A, a lot of M&A activity, a company that's looking to get acquired. That's the majority of it. IPO, it does come up, less frequent. That's usually a larger company that's getting to the point where they want to go public. But we do have resources to help in that capacity as well.
And so you guys act as the quarterback in terms of those, processes, if you will, and bring the professionals in and also serve in an investment banking capacity to help accomplish it, I guess. But there's a lot of upfront planning that goes into that as well and figuring out what the path is and where they want to get to. So I'd imagine that's a big part of what you do is the what. You know, what is it we're trying to accomplish?
Right. And oftentimes the business owner isn't really sure. It's not like it's always the case that the owner of the company or the CEO comes to us saying, this is exactly what I want to do. I know I need to raise capital or I know I need to sell. Oftentimes, it's a conversation that starts out with, I have this business, I have this company, I'm not exactly sure what the next move is. And so we come in and help to advise in that capacity to help them determine what's the next best path for their business and then develop a plan to get there.
Is there a strategic time that a business should really say, you know what, yeah, we're growing, and maybe it's premature, but we should start looking ahead to consider options? Is there a timing strategy for that, or is it usually, you know, right before it happens, they realize we need to fix this?
Yeah, I think depending on the sector and the industry, some sectors the companies grow more rapidly than others, right? So if it's, in the life sciences space, biotech, those, you know, the growth there can be very fast, and you need to make decisions quickly and start planning well ahead because the company growth, it's happening very quickly. In most other spaces, you have a little more time to plan. But to answer your question, I think you want to just be ahead of the curve. I don't know that there's a set exact time, for each sector or industry, but you don't want to be waiting until the 11th hour, before you're planning for whether it be your liquidity event or whether you're expanding, you're raising capital, hiring people. You don't want to be waiting to the last minute to make those decisions. So being organized and planning ahead and having all your ducks in a row, again, the right people, the right professionals to help collaborate and being in front of it.
So I wanted to bring something up sort of timely in my world, and I've noticed a lot of late, and I don't know if you've experienced this or not, access to capital, you know, go back a half a dozen years ago or, you know, a decade ago was difficult and businesses were challenged by, you know, who can I approach? One of the things I've noticed in the spam that I get these days is capital offers, you know, and it seems to me that it's this niche of funders that are just, you know, have taken their bot lists or whatever they are. And I must get 3 to 4 offers a day. You know, I'd love to partner with you and get introduced to your clients. We have access to capital. Are you seeing that? Or, you know, is deregulation caused some of that? You know, it seems to me some of them may be legitimate. Most of them are probably not.
Right.
But it's fascinating that I'm getting offers from all over the country of, you know, partner with us because we can get your clients capital.
Yeah, you are seeing that. I think some of it is advertising just to get a conversation started. It's a conversation starter. When you really then dig deeper and have that conversation, it may or may not be really what they say it is as advertised.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a lot of startups, for example, that are raising seed capital, Series A seed capital for their startup. And the angel investors that we talk to, so this is another way that we help. So I have a network of angel investors and VC firms that take a look at startups. That's where they want to invest their capital. But they do a lot of due diligence. I was meeting with an angel investor the other day who their firm, they look at around 200 deals a month.
Wow.
And they select just 2 to 3. Of that 200 or so. So they do a lot of due diligence on the company because especially if it's seed capital, these companies are pre-revenue. So it's big risk to make a commitment to invest $500,000 or $1 million or more in a startup company that doesn't even have revenue yet. So I think when you see ads for we have capital or, you know, we'd like to partner, some of that could be from a lending capacity. People are perhaps offering some, you know, non-collateralized, you know, commercial loans, that's capital. But I think it's just to start a conversation, and it may or may not really mean that they're going to fund your company.
Yeah, I suspect that most of it is not, but it's interesting. I've noticed over the last year or two that there's a lot more of those out there.
There's a lot more activity. There's a lot more deal flow is at a peak right now over the last 6 to 12 months in terms of transactions happening, businesses that are selling. So if you are a business owner looking to potentially sell, now is a pretty good time. There's a lot of...
The multiples are up.
Multiples are up. Private equity firms are out there looking for companies to either acquire in full or even... I had a business owner a couple of months ago that just sold part of the business. So they didn't even sell the whole company. They sold 49% and maintained 51% ownership. So they're still in the driver's seat in control, but they monetized on 49% of the company to a private equity buyer.
So that's a good question. If you gain a confidence and trust through the business transaction, you're able to help, which is important. You can do sort of both sides. You can help them after they monetize to invest and plan.
Exactly, which is key because the planning that goes into the business and the succession planning for that business often ties into the business owner's personal wealth management planning. So I need to help them not only for planning for their business, but also for their personal wealth management planning situation.
And you probably don't get a lot of that. Usually there's probably segregated firms helping, you know, they got a planner over here, a financier over here. So you're able to kind of take a holistic approach almost.
Exactly. It's fully integrated. So by the time that liquidity event happens, we know exactly where the money's going to go, how much needs to be set aside for taxes, how much is going to go into this trust, how much is going to go, you know, designated over here for perhaps the beneficiaries, how much may even be carved out for a charitable donation for a tax deduction. So we have it all mapped out by the time that transaction happens.
So you, by working with them, I guess psychologically you're in their head and you know what they're looking to do, which is probably even more important than the rest of it. You know where their mindset is and what they're trying to accomplish and the goals and objectives.
Absolutely. That's probably the most important aspect is understanding and learning what's most important to the client for their business and for their personal situation. What is it that they're trying to accomplish? Because if I don't if I'm not exactly what you said, if I'm not in their head, if I don't know what's important to them, then I can't properly guide them in the right direction. So it's very important.
And it seemed to me, you talked about it's a good opportunity for, or the marketplace is hot and looking for opportunities. And I think with the growth of private equity, you know, there aren't enough deals for the people that are looking for them, or at least what I often hear people terming good deals. So it would seem to me that one of the things that you do is evaluate where the fit might be in the marketplace for a private equity deal, because not, you know, whether it's private equity, venture capital, they're not all created equal either.
Right.
And a big part, in particular in the client that you cited, a 5149 deal, you got to get along with the people. You're going to be working with them moving into the future. It's a new partnership that you formed, essentially.
Absolutely.
And so it would seem to me that a good part of what you need to do is figure out, as John said, what's in the person's head, what do they want, and then try and identify a fit for that. And that's the part that probably takes a lot of skill and finesse.
Yeah, and it gets tricky, because there may be a, you know, from a financial aspect, a great opportunity on the table, and oftentimes the business owner, my client, will come to me and say, "Do you think this is the right buyer? Is this the right buyer? Is this the right fit?" And I'm often in that situation where I need to assess the situation and give my straight opinion and expertise on, do I think it is the right fit? You know, even if the numbers make sense, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the right fit with the right people, with the right strategy. Are they going to come in and just, you know, change the company around and start, you know, laying people off? Or do they have the same vision that the business owner does? But that's also the 51% aspect is pretty key there, because then you maintain majority ownership and a lot of those decisions can still be controlled by the business owner.
But a 49% partner can also obstruct a lot of things and make it challenging to get things done.
They call it a fiduciary responsibility.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, because at Exit, I've got a client in the same similar situation that decided they could probably get higher value selling to an outside party, but wants to maintain that sort of family feel to the firm, because they've got loyal employees who've been there for a long time and want to perpetuate that, and so made a decision to sell internally. And work a transition process. And he's looking at it saying, but, you know, it's a win-win. It becomes a win-win. And I think so, anticipating what that client need is and what their desires are, and then putting a structure in place that meets those needs is critical.
Absolutely. And it's not only the financial aspect, but it's the business owners, the whole psychology of selling your business, what happens afterwards. So it might be better, just from a lifestyle psychological aspect for that business owner, even if they take a little bit less of a multiple, if they're ultimately satisfied and happy with how things went. We have a behavioral finance specialist at UBS that will actually get involved in just that capacity, the whole psychology of selling.
Fascinating subset, of what people do. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it just helping with the intangibles. What's the plan after you sell? What do you want this to look like? What's going to resonate?
Right. And we've talked about that a lot today. You know, people may have the financial picture, and very often that's black and white to some degree. There's not often a lot of, you know, you can quantify it. You can put it on a spreadsheet. You could say, you know, here's what you're going to take away. Here's what the tax implication is. You know, if we do our job and we grow at X percent, you know, you'll have income for life type of thing. But are you ready Monday morning to not go to the office?
Yeah.
You know, and that's a big world that I think, and you've probably experienced this in your practice, that a lot of deals get to that 95% line, and then somebody pulls back and says, not sure this is what I want.
Yeah.
And that's
it. Happens.
Yeah.
And it's,
what's the average on a business transaction, the average, rough average of the time to consummate a deal? Is it 6 months for you, a year?
Yeah, I would say on average six to eight months. It can take longer. Certainly, yeah. I've seen deals that have taken 12 to 18 months. But if the right people are in place, again, the right M&A attorney, that's critical. If you don't have the right attorney, that could actually completely ruin the deal. Mm-hmm. If you have somebody that doesn't have experience doing deals and knowing how to move things forward. But I would say on average 6 to 8 months is probably a good average. Maybe some faster and some take longer, but that's right in the middle.
Very interesting.
And I think there's a lot of variables that go into it. How prepared is the company? How buttoned up are they? And, you know, a lot of small and mid-sized companies, run the way they always have, and they don't have a lot of the pieces in place to make it a smooth transition. And so, you know, that's where the fits and starts come in, I guess. Exactly. You know, somebody sees it and says, oh, well, we don't like this. Okay, we'll work through this over the next 6 weeks and we'll get it resolved. And, you know, so there's a delay in the process from that perspective.
It's everything. We come in and the advisors that we work with will come in, the investment bank will look at the company and look at the management structure. And if there's gaps or holes, it may take some time to get the company ready for sale, so to speak. So, you know, getting the structure, the appropriate management structure in place so that it's going to look attractive to the right buyer. So they know what the company should look like once they learn about the business and the model.
Excellent. Our guest today on Radio Entrepreneurs has been Jonathan Penta of Penta Wealth Management, UBS Financial Services. Jonathan, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Thank you. Best way to reach me is via email or by phone. Emails jonathan.penta@ubs.com or my office direct 781-446-8927.
Wonderful. You're listening to Radio Entrepreneurs, and we'll be right back with another segment on Radio Entrepreneurs.